FYLP is sponsored by CapturedPrey.com. Visit CapturedPrey.com today for all your import and third-party Transformers needs, and save even more through the Captured Prey Loyalty Program. You can also save on shipping on domestic orders of $150 or more. See website for details. CapturedPrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service. Mega Toy Fan. Maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com for all your vintage toy needs. You can also find Mega Toy Fan at popular robot and toy conventions year-round. Minimize your costs and maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com.
Perceptia here. Welcome to Transformers for your listening pleasure. TFYLP for short. Join us and discuss the latest in Transformers fandom. Now, where did I put that chorus stop? Ratchet, will you take the chorus stop? Transformers! Defenders of
truth! Robots who fight in disguise! Hello, everyone, and welcome to Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, TFYLP, episode number 185, recorded January 22nd, 2016. I am your host, Deron Land, a.k.a. Weird Wolf. Along with me this evening is Rick Alvarez.
Welcome to Earth.
Third rock from the sun. Jim Black.
I'm back. I'm front on both sides.
And you're blowing out your audio.
Cool. Sorry.
I think you need to work. Yeah. I think you need to work on your gain. Your gain's a little bit high.
I'll keep mess of it.
Okay. And also joining us is Greg Metcalf, aka Insane Galvatron.
You know, it's better he's blowing out his audio than what he typically does, which is blowing things out of his ass.
Yeah. Well, at least it's just not random stuff, you know.
I have Robo Boobies with me tonight.
Robo Boobs.
If you remember our year-end show, this was my toy of the year for last year.
Misassembled year.
I call bogus on that, if that was your toy of the year, because I just literally sat here and watched you open that for the first time.
Well, because of this, I already knew about this. The fact that they remolded this specific part makes it toy of the year.
He's pointing at the tits.
He's touching.
Yes, he's touching the tits.
For our audio
boundaries, dude.
Viewers, he's now massaging the tit.
And before the show is over, I'm sure he's going to lick it.
He has a thing.
I'm not using my hands.
Yeah. So what's he massaging it with?
Yes.
Use your imagination, listeners, or go back and watch the video on YouTube.
Well, tonight we're going to be talking about 1984. The year in Transformers, it's the first of many, many that we are going to do, because Transformers have been around. This is, 32 years now that they've been around. So we're going to be talking about Transformers. There's 32 years of Transformers that we're going to look at specifically. So there's going to be at least 32 episodes that are dealing with one specific year of Transformers. And it's not going to be every week that we do this, but once in a while we'll pick a year and go back and look at it. What better place to start than the beginning, 1984? And a lot of people might be saying, what is there to look at? Well, there's a lot of listeners out there and a lot of viewers out there that are just coming back to Transformers or just getting into Transformers for the first time, and they may not be aware of what it was like. I was around back then. Rick was around. Greg was around. I'm sure he was a kid. Jim, were you around? I'm sure. I think you were. I think you're still a pup, aren't you?
Well, as far as 84, I would have been about 4 or 5 months old-ish.
Oh, yeah, so you don't remember it.
as of New Year's.
Yes.
I read it vicariously through my older brother.
But, well, I mean, you may be aware of the toys and everything from then, but, you know, we'll reminisce a little bit about the year and what we do remember about it. I mean, it was 32 years ago, so, you know, a memory gets a little fuzzy, especially when you're on alcohol. But we're going to talk a little bit about that. I've picked a figure randomly to kind of talk about tonight before we go into it. And for those of you who are listening, this is the RID 2.0 Decepticon Hunter Prime. It's, I guess, Cyberverse Commander sized. It's roughly that size, and it's got translucent orange armor that you can apply to it. And I have to say, this thing, compared to the rest of the line, blows it away. I mean, it's still got its hollow issues and everything. It's really lightweight, but that's to be expected. I mean,
what's the price point on that?
It's about $15. But you get a actual mini con with it called Bludgeon, and I don't know if you can pick it up on the camera there, but he's got a face. He turns into, I guess, like a wrecking ball. Just folds up, and he kind of automorphs. But on the front of the wrecking ball, he's got like a little face, and then like the old style villains with the handlebar mustache, you know, it's got like one of those molded into it, and it's kind of neat. I like that. But the real star here is the Decepticon Hunter Prime. I mean, he's got a lot of good posability. You know, he's got elbows, knees, hips, all ball joints, shoulders. And if you flip down the Energon mask, his head actually does turn. Well, turns stiff, but it turns. And then the armor and everything comes off of him and can form like a big, I guess, club or something. On you put it on the axe and it becomes like a big club.
Now, does that weapon work for the regular deluxe figures?
I would assume so, because it looks like a 5mm top connector. You know, I mean, it's like you could take that take the axe off and put it on there, and then the armor itself, while most of it wouldn't be able to be used on any other figure, but it does have, looks like 5mm pegs inside the thing there. So you might be able to plug it onto other robots.
Does that Energon armor have a name? Like, it becomes a little character on the side. So is it like its own little named character, or is it just a little?
I don't think it has a name. I mean, I just ripped into the package and didn't even look. But in the packages in the other room there, but really nice figure. So, you know, it kind of a mini review here. If I were going out and, you know, wanted to spend $15 on a figure and this was available, I wouldn't turn it down. I mean, I've actually been messing with this thing all day, and it's kind of fun to play with. I mean, just sit and transform it back and forth two or three times.
You know, I'm stuck in that old world where, I mean, this just goes to show how old I am. I'm 36. But, you know, $15 to me, that was a mega figure back during the Beast Wars era. You know, and $9.99 got you a deluxe figure, which was bigger than deluxe is now. So It's just, you know, it's another time, you know, changes and
bygone eras.
Well,
ironically, right before I opened this, I picked a friend of ours, Orson, was in Detroit over the weekend, and he visited several toy shops up there, and he sent me some pictures, and I kind of perused through them. The one thing I did really, really want that I saw in the pictures, but he wound up getting himself, was a mint and sealed box Japanese Magna Boss, which was really awesome. But he wound up getting that. And the other two things was a sealed Beast Machines Blast Punch Optimus Primal, which for that scale was probably the best show accurate primal that we could get, even to this day. Not very poseable, but the detail on it is quite nice, and I love the colors. The facial expression on the monkey, you can press down that little blue button, and he kind of has that, you know, kind of looks like Greg and his resting bitch face there.
Sorry, I was putting Black Dragon his clothes on it.
I got that, and then the other thing that that he got, harking back to what you just said, Rick, was Japanese Beast Wars 2 Apache, or as we knew him here in America, Baboon. And that was actually the very first time I've ever actually had the chance to mess with that toy, and it was a mega back in the day for $15. The guy is, I mean, he's easily twice as big as this guy, and just goes to show you that back then more bang for your buck, no pun intended. Baboon, you know?
Yeah, I always wanted to repaint and remold of him as Baboonimus, like he'd be like the hot rod.
Yeah. He's got really nice color. The only thing I don't like about him is the fact that he doesn't have inner wrist swivels. His wrists will swivel out, swing out, but they won't swing in. I mean, he just kind of has that weird hand thing. But a lot of it's one of those things like some Beast Wars era toys have. They you know, because of their transformation, have some limitations on like the hands and the feet. But overall, I really like the toy. It's, I kind of got it because I collect the weird beasts, you know, like the penguins and the ammonites and the bunnies and stuff.
And, you know, all those guys are, making appearances again in, comic books, in the Idgewa comics. They're starring in the Sins of the Wreckers right now.
Baboon is in it.
I don't think Baboon is it. The Penguin is in it. Stampy's in it.
Don't tell me Stampy is a Wrecker.
No. They're like the team that goes up against the Wreckers.
Stampy and Brake.
Spoiler alert, yeah, by the way, contest, for anybody who hasn't read those yet.
Yeah.
No contest whatsoever.
Tarantulas is in it.
Well, because in issue one, you have, like, a polar bear, and it gets drop-kicked by a robot, and you're like, why did the polar bear not just explode? Of course, then you find out it's...
Polar Claw.
Yeah. Right.
Did my video freeze?
No, I think he cut out.
Yeah, you cut out, Greg.
Oh. All thing I said was that in issue two, you find out that it was actually Polar Claw. That's why it didn't explode in issue one when it got kicked by a car.
Yeah, I mean, Baboon is really great. Blast Punch Primal, I liked him mainly because of the detail and stuff, but, you're right. You know, back in the day, a Mega sold for about $15. Today, we get these tiny things. But so is economics today. You know, we can't really do anything about that, as far as changing the price for toys. Any thoughts or any questions about this guy, or, you know, I just kind of wanted to highlight it and, you know, talk about something that's current and what my thoughts were.
Is it the same as the current, like, Legends class Prime?
This is the...
Or is it like the Warrior class? Or
this is like the alternate colors Legends Prime right here. And this is...
So it's a new mold.
So it's a completely new mold. And as you can see, this version of Legends Prime, he has no knees, no elbows, no head swivel.
You don't have the Warrior to compare it to, do you?
He doesn't have the touch.
I do not. No. I don't have the touch. I don't have the power.
Because I have the Warrior version. I was just wondering how it was size-wise compared to that.
Well, Warriors are deluxe size, and I guess G1 Prime here is roughly a good comparison for deluxe in size. So there you go.
Okay.
On G1 Prime, he comes up to about his chest.
You mentioned that the armor can combine it into kind of a club or something. Have you tried to see if it can combine it other configurations, like maybe a a little bitty mech, kind of like a like an Action Master type mech or something.
Yeah, kind of. Does it have like that B-Mog effect to it?
You know, honestly, I haven't messed around with the armor that much. You know, I just kind of messed with the toy, but it might. I don't know. I don't want to have a whole bunch of dead air here and go while I'm doing this. But.
Well, why don't we get into the R84 segment? Should we start off by saying how we got our first Transformers? I assume the three of us got them in 84.
Yeah, yes. that's fair assumption. Although my first Transformer was not a 1984 Transformer, I have to say.
All right, so what's that story?
My very first Transformer was actually the Constructicon Bone Crusher. We were talking a little bit before the show about the Toy World Constructicons and how much I'm gushing over them because, well, you know, I'm a Devastator whore because I love the Constructicons. And part of that love comes from the fact that my very first Transformer was a Constructicon. And I got him, I would assume, early 85, I guess, whenever they first hit. But I was aware of Transformers. I watched the cartoon in 84. But I was such a He-Man fan at the time. You know, I was all wrapped up in that. So I didn't get into Transformers until early 85. But I was there were still some 84s on the shelf, and I was able to get those. My very first boxed Transformer was Dinobot Snarl. But at the same time I got him, he was the first one I picked up on the shelf. But after him, I picked up Blue Streak and Jazz. And those two guys were probably my first 84s, I would have to say. I guess it would suffice to say we need to kind of talk about what was released in 84. Should we kind of go over those and then kind of go through our stories individually?
Yeah. You want to start with the Autobots?
Yeah, I've got them pulled up here on TFU.info, great source of information here again. Blue Streak and Brawn, Bumblebee, Bumper, I guess. I don't know, was he official?
Well, do you want to, should we break it up by segments, like size classes? So there was the Mini Spies, right?
Yeah.
And we had Bumblebee, Windcharger, Brawn, Ears, Pipes. Oh no, sorry, Huffer, and
Gears.
Cliff Jumper and Bumper. So those were your cheap price points.
Mini cars.
I think some of the old carded figures I have say $3.99 on them.
Yeah, and they were kind of cheap. Those were the toys that whenever, as a kid, you went into the toy aisle, and you know how many of us begged for a Transformer.
Absolutely.
And you always went for the big money first, and it always trickled down to, okay, here's this one that's $3.99. Can I get that, Mom? But I think, well, Greg is showing our video.
I was trying to screen share. Here we go.
You were screen sharing the
1984 toy catalog.
Yes. All right, Rick, you want to use talking there? You had.
Yeah. You know, these catalogs. It's definitely something that's missing from modern toys in general, I think, where you had a fold-out cross section of all the different products that were available, and I know a couple people, including myself, have a few of these framed. Because it's just a nice piece of memorabilia to go look at in your bathroom while you're using the bathroom.
It's a checklist, too, if you want to get them all. You know, like yeah, you're trying to collect everything. Because I have seen some fold-out, you know, cross-promotional stuff in some newer toys, but it's usually not the entire line. It's not a checklist. It's just a handful of things, usually just showing Optimus or Bumblebee from one of the movie lines. I've had a few of those over the last, you know, few years recently, but never a full inclusive checklist like we used to get back then.
Exactly. And I think toy lines have become so diverse and segmented that it's kind of hard to even do that now, to have a cross sell like this. So basically all these characters, despite being different price points, were all still in the same world. And you didn't have what you have today, where it's like, well, you have your $3.99 Optimus, and then you have your
$39.99 Optimus.
You just had one Optimus Prime, and that was it.
Now, you said you have this hanging in your bathroom.
Yeah. Yes. The guest bathroom, without the shower in it.
Huh.
You gotta have something up there.
I wouldn't have thought of doing that. That's interesting.
It's right under. I have the Hard Hero Insecticons right above it.
Jim is like, what?
So then we move on to the next price point, which were our standard or deluxe Autobot cars.
Mm-hmm.
And just like some of the mini spies, these were repurposed from various toy lines. Diaclone, Diacron, Micronauts. You have Ironhide, Ratchet, Sunstreaker, Bluestreak, Prowl, Mirage, Sideswipe, Jazz, Hound, Trailbreaker, not Trail Cutter, and Wheeljack. And I think these were in the $12.99 price range.
12 to 15, yeah.
That sounds good. Depending.
I thought I remember hearing these were like around 8 or 9.
Yeah, 15 seemed kind of high.
Back then.
I think my Box Town says $11.99 or $12.99 on it.
It could have varied on the retailer, too. From Kmart to FAO Schwartz.
Yeah, well, for people who don't know, Kmart is a store that would sell Transformers.
Yeah, it's kind of like a Walmart, but you can imagine that.
Or KB's or Hills or
Zaire.
Yeah. Service merchandise.
Wow.
Back in the day.
City. Yeah, we should do a show on toy stores of futures past.
Old yes. retailers, yes. Well. Okay, let's finish off the Autobots here with the biggest and the baddest.
Optimus Prime.
Optimus Prime.
Mm-hmm. He was the highest price point in 1984 mm-hmm. for the Autobots. I think he retailed, between 30 and 40?
I thought he was like 25.
No, were him and Megatron, were they the same price point?
I don't think so. I wouldn't say that Megatron was more expensive for some reason.
I don't recall that, actually. I just remember that Prime was above what my parents were willing to pay at that time. And whenever I went onto the toy aisle, I always knew to not ask for the ones in the really big boxes unless it was like my birthday or to point out something that was coming for Christmas, you know, and Optimus Prime was one of those that, like, I always wanted, but I never actually owned one until I was an adult. And now I've owned him like several times over, and several different iterations of the same Generation 1 character. But in 1984, this guy was the one that everybody wanted. I had a neighbor kid that had one, and that was my first exposure to him. I mean, it was like the Autobot leader. But I always loved it, and then I was a little bit disappointed because the way he was portrayed in the cartoon and the way he was portrayed in the comic books, he was so much bigger than the other Autobot cars. But yet you stand this guy next to a typical Autobot car, and he might be an inch, half inch taller, you know. but before we move on to the Decepticons.
Okay. I pulled up, it's kind of small, hard to share. I mean, I can try to share it, but I don't know how it'll show up on screen. But I Googled a quick Sears catalog from 1984. It says Optimus Prime was $20.99. Megatron was $20.99. Soundwave was $14.99.
Wow.
I don't know how well that's showing up on your screen, but I'll go back a page here. And notice they had the GoBots getting top billing on these pages. GoBots, Transformers shared a page. GoBots were on top, Transformers on the bottom. Looks like they're M through O. All the prices are on the second page here.
Well, sure. GoBots had to have some kind of firm foundation to try to stand on, you know?
Looks like all the Autobot cars were $9.94, and the Decepticon jets were $11.94. That was either ordered from the Sears catalog back in the day.
Nice.
Those were actual catalog scans.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, like Jim said earlier, too, it all depends on what retailer you went to. I mean, you and I both, we lived in the mountains of eastern Kentucky at that time.
You either bought it at Kmart or you bought it from Sears.
Or had a catalog. Or a smaller retailer like I remember there was one near where we were called Malone's. And they were like a small, they were kind of, I think Dollar General, but like more diverse selection of stuff. It was like a Walmart that they, an old time Walmart that they could cram into like a little Dollar General type size. And they actually sold Transformers.
The town I grew up in, the two major stores were a store called Magic Mart and Kmart. But most of my toys around, especially in like 84, would have come from the Sears catalog. Because I'm sure most people our age remember, you know, that catalog would come in the mail and you would just sit there and flip through the pages and just lay on your stomach with your, you know, your chin cradled in your hands, just, you know, gushing over the pages and think, wow, that'd be cool, that'd be cool. And that's usually where you circled what you wanted for Christmas and gave that to your parents or your grandma or whatever, because they could just go to the book, see what you circled, and that's where your toy, and then most of my toys back came from the Sears catalog. In fact, I think that's where my first G1 toy came from, which was Optimus Prime. Because, you know, for some reason I really liked, you know, trucks as a kid. And, you know, I saw the new cartoon. They showed it at school or in kindergarten during the Bozo show. They showed the clips of, like, More Than Meets the Eye, and I was hooked instantly. I kept telling my mom, man, I want Optimus Prime, man. He's the coolest. These Transformers are awesome. These robots that turn into vehicles and stuff. And I'm like, and this one called Optimus Prime turns into a truck. It's awesome, and I want it. And that's what I got for Christmas 84.
I'm impressed that they would show something like that on the Bozo show. You're talking about like the WGN Chicago Bozo?
Yeah.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, because they even had like the game where you'd bounce the balls in the cups, and when the Transformers were a hot item. Yeah, when Transformers were a hot item, I remember that's what they would give away, and I wanted to submit my information to be the at home player so I could win free Transformers too.
Wanted to bounce your balls in a cup, Greg.
Well, I couldn't go be on the show. I wanted to be the at home player because you got what the other person, whatever they won on the show, the at home player would get the same prizes. And I just wanted to be picked so I could get Transformers. But I never was.
Yeah, that's – I remember those days. That now, before we move on to the Decepticons and talk about the Decepticons that were out that year, Rick, you want to have talk about any of your memories from 84?
I'm one of those guys that is lucky enough to still have his first Transformer. It was my mom – I was living in New Jersey at the time. My mom went down the street to the local Kmart and bought me a Gears, and that was my first Transformer. And he's still with me. He's traveled to all the different states I've lived in. He's traveled to another continent where I used to live, back to the U.S. North America, and up here in Connecticut, and now we're about to move to Massachusetts. For some reason, all my other Transformers got broken or lost parts, and that's just the one guy that I've always kept with me. And for the longest time, he used to live inside my Star Convoy in his chest, so I wouldn't lose him.
So even the pieces on the legs haven't snapped off or anything?
No, he's discolored. All the chrome's kind of blue. It's all faded, but he's still all in one piece.
Nice. That was an issue I always have with Gears was the pieces of the truck cap would snap off on the legs there.
No, I always had the problem with Bumblebee and Cliffjumper, where the little part where the windshield wiper would come down would just snap off.
You know, that's something, you know, how you still have that Gears, and it's like got all kinds of this wear after all these years, and you still have it. And I guarantee you there's nothing that would let you part with that toy.
No, I'll either be buried with it or pass it on to my kids.
You know, it's the same way with my original Dinobots. I have all five. Well, I didn't have Slag back in the day, so my Slag is relatively new. But I still got my Snarl, Grimlock, Sludge, and Swoop. And all four of them, they have seen better days. Mostly, they're still mostly complete, but there's nothing that would make me part with them. I mean, yeah, I could get better Dinobots, better versions of them, but you know, there's some kind of sentimentality to, from those that are just so awesome. You know, I don't want to ever part with them. And you know, whenever we talk about 1984, we have got to talk about nostalgia because
absolutely,
it absolutely drives. It drove Transformer. It may not necessarily drive it today because there's so much more out there that is new. But if you talk about the original Transformers for years and years and years, the nostalgia kept driving it. I would dare say that even in the early 2000s, the Transformers brand was driven largely from a collector base through nostalgia. What do you guys think about that?
Despite Beast Wars being the main focus?
Well, yeah, I remember when they went back to Autobots and Decepticons with RID, and I guess it was Car Robots in Japan first. Collectors were going nuts for that stuff, and that was the nostalgia-driven thing. We wanted the Autobots and Decepticons back like we had when we were kids. Mm-hmm. And I think the majority of the fandom was those people like us that were wanting that stuff back. And, you know, I think you know, more and more of us have fallen off. There's not as many collectors our age as there were back, you know, 10 years ago, because they just, I guess it was a phase maybe. I think the majority of our, you know, people in the fandom now are newer fans that came in like from the movies, you know, brought them in. I think nostalgia isn't as big of a factor now as it was then, but yeah, definitely 15 years ago, it was
mostly I'm not saying that Beast Wars is completely. I'm not trying to wash over Beast Wars by saying that Generation One nostalgia was the only thing that kept it alive. Beast Wars brought it back to the mainstream. Mm-hmm. But as far as the Masterpiece line is largely driven by Generation One characters. Now we're getting a Beast Wars character this year in Optimus Primal, and I think heavens for that. I totally applaud it, and I want more of those. But my chair's giving up on me here. But at the same time, I don't want them to stop on the 84, 85, 86 guys either. There's still a number of those, and it's simply for nostalgia.
Well, at what point do you think it's going to switch from, because we're getting older, right? Mm-hmm. And the kids who grew up with Armada are they're coming into their own, and then eventually the movie kids will come into their own. At what point do you think it's going to switch from there being a Masterpiece G1 Optimus to a Masterpiece, whatever the next thing is, Armada Prime or Car Robots Optimus? Masterpiece Movie Optimus.
My thoughts on that are...
How many years before we get there?
I think what's going to happen is... Transformers in the 80s were huge for boys' toys. I don't think they ever hit that level of popularity again until the movies. Well, I think, you know, like your Beast Wars people and your Unicron Trilogy people are coming into that age group now that we were 15 years ago. But those shows weren't as popular when they were new, so they're not going to have as many people nostalgic about them. So you're never going to see
that. It could be argued that Transformers back in 1984 and 85 specifically were the boys' toy brand. G.I. Joe was a very, very close second. But to my recollection, whenever I was a kid and I was out on the playground and all the boys – we was all talking about Transformers. You know, it was all Transformers.
And I don't think any other era has gotten that kind of attention to be that mainstream amongst kids or, I guess, any age group until we get to the 07 movie. So, I think eventually we may get to the point where the masterpieces are focusing on movie stuff because when those people are – but, I mean, think about it, the 07 movie is almost 10 years old now. It's a, you know, we're entering 9 years ago from when that movie came out. So you got to think kids who were 10 when the movie came out, well, they're 19 now. So they're getting ready to get into that prime age group to aim this stuff at. Whether or not it hits that soon or not, I don't know. But I would think if they were going to start doing masterpieces of something more than just the occasional bone like we're getting this year for Beast Wars, to like be all, okay, we're done with G1, let's focus on this, I'd say give it about another 10 years and it'll be movie stuff.
Well, you, so
specifically
you
from the 07 movie.
You mentioned that you don't think any other had quite that success or exposure, but I almost want to say, and this is just my opinion. I mean, you could think otherwise, but I want to say RID 1.0 came exceptionally close, if not pretty close to that same standard, simply because not only was it a return to the heritage Autobots and Decepticons, but also, if you recall, it was on Fox Kids, which in those years, late 90s, early 2000s, that was the kids' network. I mean, Nickelodeon was still popular, don't get me wrong, but, I mean, you had Power Rangers on there, and you had, a lot of these other shows that were, going really strong. Beast Wars and Beast Machines, Beast Machines maybe not so much, but Beast Wars was very, very successful on that network. And then when Robots in Disguise premiered, it was in a similar time slot to like Power Rangers Time Force and some other shows at the time, and I think it did really, really well because of that. It had a good time slot. You had weekday afternoon play as well as Saturday morning play for its entire run on that station.
Well, I mean, if you think back to like 1984, that is the year that it all began. I mean, they took these old micro change, Diaclone, Microman toys and repackaged them, gave them some of them new heads like Wheeljack, and gave them names and characters and called them Transformers. And because what would you attribute to the success? Was it the comics, the cartoons, or was it a combination of both back in 1984 that made them catch fire more so than the Diaclone and their previous portrayals were?
I've got to say the cartoon.
I think they had the perfect trifecta, which is what toy companies look for, having worked at Hasbro. They had the triangle. They had the toys. They had the entertainment, which was the cartoon, and the publishing, which comic books and coloring books. And they had all the licensed goods too. They had the T-shirts. They had the radio, the headphones, the bicycles. All that stuff creates a perfect storm for your entire brand to pretty much spread out and have legs. Not a whole lot of brands launch like that these days, like they did in the 80s, where they would launch with a full licensing plan and a full entertainment plan and a full toy line. Now you get these soft launches or you get these partial launches, and then maybe 6 months, 8 months, a year later, you'll start to see more licensed goods, some T-shirts and, the bicycles and the Valentine's kits and the Halloween stuff.
But I think that's largely in part because, would you say, because the market is so saturated with other things that draw attention away from that particular brand, not necessarily Transformers, but whatever brand you're one might be talking about, it's just a lot harder in today's market to launch like that.
It is. There's a lot of different brands out there. There's a lot of different entertainment out there. Something that you didn't have to compete with as much as you do today was game consoles. Kids who play with toys are getting younger and younger and younger because kids are discovering video games at a faster rate now, and they're moving away from toys to the electronic games.
So you think that eventually the toy market will be entirely adult collectors.
Well, no, I think you have. I think we're already in the, I would say the second stages of this split, where the toy company, in general, they acknowledge the collector, and they acknowledge the main consumer, and the main consumer are the little kids now. You have less articulation. You look at your Star Wars, look at your Marvel Titans, your large Star Wars Titans, Transformer Titans. Look at the articulation on your DC figures, same thing. Everything's starting to gear more and more towards younger children, where, say, Generations isn't necessarily the focus. Transformers might be a bad example because there is a lot of focus on Generations from Hasbro. But on the other spectrum, you have your collectors. You have the guys who are paying $100, $200, $500, $1,000 per figure. Mm-hmm. So I think you're going to see those splits become more and more and more. I think He-Man is a good example of that, where you have the classic, say, the Generation-style He-Man figures. It's an online exclusive, and it only lives online. It doesn't have the legs to be in a retail store. And I think eventually stuff like Generations could end up more towards more in that area, where you have a small selection at retail, and then you have a larger selection online as exclusives.
I could see that. So. What you were saying about the game consoles and things, that makes perfect sense, because not long before Transformers premiered in 84, in 83 was the infamous video game crash, where the market just dropped out because of oversaturations of crap games like the famous E.T. for Atari. So there for a while, like in 84, you know, video games were just kind of a taboo there for a little while until the NES came out that next year. So really action figures and toys were you know, in an optimum spot to be able to take off. So I think it was kind of the perfect kind of the perfect collection of different events that just happened. You know, I don't think we'll see something like that again, honestly.
I don't think we'll see it again in Transformers, just because of the nature of what it is, being an action figure centric thing. Mm-hmm. But I think that whole perfect trifecta of marketing, all the things the kids are into, we've seen that. And there's another franchise that has a very, like, I've noticed you go to Comic Con, see a lot of people cosplaying as some of these characters, but the Pokemon, because the video game consoles were getting big, so you had like the Pokemon games for the Game Boy, and then they put a cartoon along with that. And yeah, there would be some toys, but that was more of like, it wasn't the focus. And you have people going to comic conventions dressed as characters from Pokemon cartoons from, you know, 15 years ago, because they were 8, 9, 10 years old. Now they're in their early 20s. They're going to conventions dressed up as Misty and Ash and dressing up their little kid as Pikachu. You know, it's, I mean, you see this stuff. And, you know, because it was what the kids were into at the time it came out, that's what it focused on. And the franchise is big, even though it never had a huge toy line. And unless Transformers gets away from toys and becomes mostly like a video game franchise or movie or, you know, something that people are into will draw kids in, I don't think we're ever going to see anything like that, like the 84 heyday again, because our society's gotten to the point where action figures and toys, as Rick said, they're more a little kid thing. You know,
I think we're starting to see that already. What really drives Transformers these days? Is it the toys? No. It's the entertainment. It's the shows. It's primarily the movies, which drives toy sales, DVD releases. Pumping out that entertainment, even if it's old entertainment, that's what's really driving the toy sales. And then you have all the licensed goods, and you'd be surprised how much money they make off all that licensed material. I already think, just from my experience, having worked there and being a collector and having a good frame of reference, I think toys have already been pushed to the side in many cases. Star Wars. I think that's why Lego is going after so many licenses, because the people who play with Lego, even that is splitting. It's getting younger and younger and younger, And now they have to split who they're catering to. They have to cater to the young kids, and you see a bigger selection in Duplo. You see a bigger selection in City. And then you have the collector, and you see a bigger collection offering in Legos for adult collectors like me.
And, like the Star Wars Legos.
Yeah, yeah, like all the $200 Legos that I can't buy. And everything's becoming digitized now, and it's...
Well, let's be honest. Whenever you go to a toy aisle, I honestly see a lot more adults on the toy aisle anymore than I do do kids. I mean, you see kids. I see kids in like the preschool area and everything like that. But by the time you get up into the aisles that are like action figures and diecast cars and whatnot, it's almost always adults that's there. I see kids going to the electronics and everything, and just like Rick said, I mean it's already happened. It begs the question, you know, if Transformers had not have happened in 1984, and let's say that Hasbro tried to launch them today, they wouldn't. Do you think they'd even catch ground? Even with
now, the, what, the now media what do you machine. Mean by launch though? Without a film.
I mean, with a film, comics, everything. I mean, do you think coming from? I mean, if they had absolutely nothing before this year, and Hasbro said, "Hey, here's this new toy line called Transformers," and they give us stuff like this.
I think as long as it had a film attached to it, it would become one of those properties that goes in waves. It goes up and down. Every time a movie comes up, Iron Man, Spider-Man, Star Wars, Transformers sales go up. When there's no movie, sales go down. And I think that's how what it would be.
It wouldn't have the staying power that it has right now.
I don't think so.
Well, I don't know. I mean, to me, looking back at 84, like I remember back as a kid, yeah, the Diaclone toys have been around, so the idea of a robot turning into a car, but it didn't have the exposure because with the media, with the cartoons, the comics, I wasn't even aware of Diaclone. But when I was made aware of it through the cartoon, the thing about Transformers I loved, cut out of my
back. You're fine.
Okay. The thing I loved was just the concept of, wow, because before you had toy cars, or you had like an action figure, like a G.I. Joe. Well, these were like basically little men who turned into the cars. Mm-hmm. And that just captured my imagination. If Transformers had never happened in the 80s, so that concept were still undiscovered, you know, you only had like the little sidelines like Diaclone sits on the end, you know, the end cap of an aisle that nobody really notices. If they were to present the idea in a way in the media that would get people's attention, I think the same fascination would happen today as it did back then.
So think about the digital revolution that's happened since the time when we were kids. Mm-hmm. Are kids even walking in those aisles anymore? Kids are now collecting files. They're not even, you know, there's kids out there who don't even buy comic books. They wait till Wednesday till someone scans them all in, and then they download the file.
And then it comes out.
Well, I didn't discover the magic of Transformers by walking down the toy aisle. It was because the Bozo Show had the cartoon. So if it were marketed at whatever kids are, whatever form of entertainment kids are consuming, and I give the perfect example of this, you know, it captured our imagination as kids in cartoon form. The only way to capture that same magic of, wow, this is the guy, the little man that turns into the car, was to do it in live action. So you could see a real car turn into a real robot. And I think that was the 07 movie, and we saw how that took off. Because then the people who didn't pay attention to cartoons will watch an action movie. So that same magic of, whoa, did you see that? Helicopters transformed into this big robot and blew up all these army men. It's that same magic that captured people in 07. Because you're doing a new form of media, you're catching people who really didn't pay attention before. And I think as long as they aimed it, whether it be through video games or whatever kids are consuming, all digital, YouTube, straight to YouTube videos, whatever, I think if nobody ever heard of them before, I think the same magic could happen. But just now we're jaded to it because Transformers are things been around for 30 years. Everybody's heard of them. Their kids have, you know, played with them. They've seen cartoons, comic books for 30 years. And they're just like, it's not, the newness has worn off. And that's why it's hard to recapture that because the newness is not there anymore.
Well, speaking of magic, what what is your story, Greg? What was your first 84 character?
Well,
your memory of 84.
Yeah, I kind of shared it a minute ago. The first thing was, like I said, the Bozo Show. For some reason, I don't know if it's their teacher. I don't know if it's a common practice in all kindergarten classes, but in my particular kindergarten class, you know, she'd let us watch the Bozo Show every day. It was like 15 minutes to half hour, whatever it was. And I think like the More Than Meets the Eye three-parter, they didn't even play the whole, I guess, 21 minutes without commercials. They didn't even play that all at once. It was split up. So like More Than Meets the Eye part one took 3 days to watch. So it took like 2 weeks of school to get through the whole More Than Meets the Eye saga. And because they would just play like 5 minute clips or 6 minute clips or whatever. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's what did it. Because I mean, it was a new concept.
Well, I mean, what was your first 84 toy and everything? I mean, did
Optimus Prime.
Do you remember how you got it? Or
yes, because I remember watching that cartoon. I went home to my mom. I was real excited. Oh, Mom, we saw this new cartoon. And I was just elated. And I was like, and she's like, oh, that's nice, honey. But then after multiple days coming home, she realized, okay, he really likes this. So then she started fishing around. Well, you know, which ones do you like? I guess you also found out at that point there were toys. And I was like, man, this Optimus Prime guy, he turns into a truck. And, you know, I love trucks. She knew I loved trucks. So that was a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. And Christmas morning, I opened up G1 Optimus Prime. It was the only one I got. It was because it's the one I said I wanted the most. And I guess you figured like any other toy, I would be really excited about it, get one, play it for a while, and then move on to something else. So she only bought the one, but she got the one I wanted. And it wasn't until the next year, like for birthdays, Christmas, all I wanted was more Transformers. And she realized I wanted
this is a beast that is not going to die. Now, the comics and the Marvel comics, did they come out before or after the cartoon? I wanted to say they came out slightly before, didn't they?
I think they came out before the cartoon. I think the commercials for the Transformers toys, actually at the tail end of the commercial for the toys, you would also get a commercial for the comic book.
Yes.
Now, I don't recall that. I did not pick up the first issue of the Marvel comic until like issue number 7 or 8. It was one with the Dinobots on the front. It had Grimlock and I believe Snarl and Sludge standing there, and I remember there was this little grocery store in the town in the Everglades that I lived in. It was called Reedy's Grocery Store, and it was small country grocery store, you know. And then they had this magazine rack. Well, my mom would go in there and she'd just walk around to get a few things that she'd need after school. And I'd go over to the magazine rack and I'd look around, you know, through different magazines, look at the comic books. And I was a huge fan of Transformers already from the cartoon. Already had several of the toys. And then I saw the comic book. I saw Grimlock. There he was in dino mode right there on the front of the cover. And I picked it up. I'm like, there's a Transformer comic. And it was like issue 7. And at that time, it was a lot harder to go back and find older issues, especially for a kid that lived in a small town 40 miles away from probably the closest. I don't even know if there really was comic shops at that time in that area. After that, every time I went to the grocery store, I had to get a new issue of the comic. I missed a few issues, but I followed it all the way through issue 80. You know,
so can I tell you real quick my comic book story?
Yeah.
I was living in South America at the time, and the week we moved back to the U.S., we were living in Florida.
Oh, he dropped off. He dropped off.
I'm still handsome. Am I there?
Yes, you're okay. You're back, man. Last we heard, you were in Florida.
All right, so I was in Florida. I had just moved back to this country. And we went to a 7-Eleven, and there was a comic book rack, and I went to check it out, and there was a Transformers comic there. And I'm like, oh my God, I have to get it. I didn't even know there was a Transformers comic. And I was really confused by it because it said number 80 in a 4-issue limited series. So my first Transformers comic book and my first exposure to the comic book was issue 80.
Wow.
That's kind of depressing.
Well, I mean, you know, it's, and the thing is it seemed like the world in the comics always moved a little bit behind. Well, not just a little bit, but a lot behind what was actually on the store shelves and what was on the cartoon. I remember it seemed like by the time I was getting the comic, they were just covering the Stunticons when on the cartoon, the Technobots were being introduced, you know. And it just seemed like if you look at the comics, you go from having like the core 84, 85 characters, and then all of a sudden it jumps in and you're seeing some of the newer characters like Trypticon and the Dinobot, I'm sorry, the Predacons, the Pretenders. You know, I think Ratbat was like in the teens, you know, if I recall correctly, the very first time you see him, and it goes for 80 issues. But it just seemed really strange to me how it worked. But the world in the comics was always different than what was in the cartoon. And I love the comics for that, because it's like I was such a huge fan of Transformers. I loved playing with the toys as a kid. I'd get down and I have my little floor battles with the toys, and that was my own story. You know, I didn't have Optimus Prime, so somebody else was a leader. I didn't have Megatron, so somebody else was a leader. So my storylines revolved around these characters that I had as a poor kid. And then there's the world of the cartoon that was on the television. With great guys like Paul Eiding and Peter Cullen and Frank Welker doing voices of these characters and bringing these characters to life. And then I would lay down at night and read the comic book, which was a completely different storyline. Truth be told, when I read the comic, I heard the voices from the cartoon mm-hmm. in my head. So it's like whenever I read Optimus Prime's lines in the book, I heard Peter Cullen. I heard Frank Welker's Megatron. You know, I heard Greg Berger's Grimlock. Although I have to admit, with some of Grimlock's writing later on, you know, where he's portrayed as a little bit smarter than he was in the cartoon. So it was a little harder to read his lines as me, Grimlock, and it just didn't seem to fit, you know. But it was like I had this overload and this saturation of Transformers, and it all began in 1984 from just looking at all there was out there. You know, I mean, I went from this hardcore He-Man fan this franchise literally took me from the grasps of the He-Man franchise, ripped me away. And I didn't look back. I mean, well, I looked back in 2002, and then they pissed me off again. I came back, but Transformers was such a different and hardcore He-Man. Yeah, ha 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 ha.
You know, yeah. I was really into He-Man as a kid, and Transformers came along, and it really did kind of stop the He-Man collecting for me, but what every now and again my mom would hook me up with a Mass toy or a Star Wars toy or a G.I. Joe or a Ghostbuster, so I was still interested in other toys, but out of all the toys I've ever had as a kid, the Transformers were the only ones that I kept, that I never gave away or sold, and I still have like probably 50 figures from when I was a kid, all beat up and in a box somewhere. And as I said, I still have my gears.
Yeah. I eventually sold the biggest part of my original collection, but you know, I've got them right here. as far as comics go, I still got my original ones. And these are the ones from my childhood. And I don't have every issue. I'm lacking about 15, 20 issues out of the 80 issues. And to me, the cartoon was great. And established a lot of characters. And whenever I buy my toys today, I want them to look like the cartoons, honestly. But as far as meaty story that I think back, there's some stories and characters from the original Marvel run that stick to me this day. And some of them aren't even mentioned today. Circuit Breaker. I loved the Circuit Breaker story arc.
She's owned by Marvel, so...
Yeah, and it just kills me inside. I mean, she was a great character in the Transformers lore, and the Scraplets. It just absolutely overjoyed me to have them mentioned in Transformers Prime. You know, because they were in the comics. You know, it was one of those things that just stuck with me. Anybody else have any comic stories like that?
Well, it's weird. I didn't even know there was a comic for a couple of years. I think it's when I started in junior high school, because I didn't have middle school back in that day. So seventh grade, that I found out that there was a comic, because the cartoon had been off the air at this point, I think, for a while. I don't remember the exact year. I'm not sure how long it was off the air, but still kind of like Transformers, but couldn't watch them. There was no cartoon or anything. And when I started going to junior high, I hooked up with some old friends I hadn't hung out with in a couple of years. We ended up in different classes. And they were still really into the Transformers. And then they started talking about how the other comics were still going. And I was like, comics? I didn't know there were comics. And they're like, oh, yeah, they're comics. And then that's why he didn't let me know it's a different storyline. It was still going. And I was like, well, I got to try to find these. So I started looking at the magazine rack at the grocery store. I usually never went to the magazine rack. And I remember the first issue I got was issue number 72, which I'm wanting to think was the one that had Optimus and Power Master Optimus and Scorponok duking it out on the cover. That's the first issue I ever got. And I think I managed to get issues 73 and 74 as well. Then I never saw 75 or after. So I only had three issues of the comic originally back in the day. And then the dawn of the internet, I got my first computer like 2000, 2001. I found a website, transfans.com. Yeah, mm-hmm. That was it.
This issue right here.
Yeah, that was my first issue. And then, so I've read scans from transfans.com. Which I don't think the website's anymore. I think it became transfans.net. And I think it's pretty much dead now. But they had comic scans.
And he drops off.
No, I got him.
So after reading the scans and then fast forward a few years, I decided, you know, I'd like to have those all on paper. So I actually found an eBay auction. It was right when Regeneration 1 was announced. I guess people saw it as a good time to cash in and put all their vintage ones up. So I had to piece it together. There were several auctions for the complete series, all 80 issues plus all the G.I. Joe crossover, the movie adaptation, and whatever. There's a total of 96 issues once you factor everything in. And yeah, I got that for maybe 96 issues. I think I paid like $2.90 something.
Pretty good. Shipping.
So about $3 an issue for vintage ones. And they were all really good condition, bagged and boarded. And so now I have the complete G1 comic run. But never did as a kid. So that was kind of neat.
Yeah, the thing is I want to go back and get those old issues. And from what I've read of the current IDW comics, I think I would absolutely love it. From what I've actually read, my life today, you know, back whenever you're a kid, you have a lot more time than you do as an adult. You know, I mean, you've got, you know, you had your time to play with your toys, you had your time to play your games, read your comic books, watch your cartoons. Now today, it's like I have my toys, I don't even get to watch the cartoons, really, honestly. The R.I.D. cartoon is on. I don't watch it all that much. I've got every series from G1 all the way through, like, Beast Machines on DVD. Don't get to watch it. I've got them ripped right here on my computer. Don't get to watch them. So reading the comics is something that is a luxury I don't get to have right now. And seeing how a lot of what's on the shelves right now harken to what's in the comics, I feel like I'm missing part of this puzzle right now. That, like in 84, it was like the perfect storm. I was all caught up in it because I had the time. I was invested in all of this. Now it's like I barely have time for the toys. And that's what sucks is being an adult, you know. Anybody else relate to that, or am I alone?
Well, I've been following Idwa since the beginning.
Idwa.
And I got to say, because I was such a hardcore Transformers collector back then, the first 2 years of IDW, it was hard to get through. But I kept going and I kept reading. And right around the beginning of year three, everything changed. Storylines started getting tied up. And every Wednesday now, my daughter and I, we go to the comic book store. And I get excited when there's a new issue of More Than Meets the Eye or Transformers. And I got to sit there and I got to read. I got to find out what's going on. There were some amazing one-shots out there. Death of Optimus Prime, The Drift, one shot. Last Stand of the Wreckers, Sins of the Wreckers, All Hell Megatron.
I have read these, though.
Defining moments in Transformers lore, all taking place on comic books, and so many people don't have those available to them. I highly encourage anyone who hasn't read IDW comics in a long time, or kind of read them and fell out, to go out and get a trade. Check it out. Anything recent, you will not be disappointed.
Well,
about a year and a half ago, I went back and read the entire IDW run from front to back to get caught up, because I kept hearing how good More Than Meets the Eye was and everything's so great. And I'm like, you know what? I don't want to just read a couple selections here and there and then the new stuff. I want the whole story. So I went back and I binge read the whole thing. And it kind of goes back to, I mean, I can agree with Drawn. We do have a lot more responsibilities now as adults, and it is harder to find time to do these luxuries. Because as a kid, you just had school and homework, and it seemed like time moved slower back then. So it's like when you were home after the homework, it seemed like that 3 or 4 hours where you went to bed felt like forever, and you could do so much stuff in it. Whereas now, if I got 3 or 4 hours to go to bed after I get home, it seems like it goes by like that, you know. And so I think that's part of it too, is their age. Time just seems to move faster. So that's what was my great about 84, was just, man, being a kid, having more time, or the perception of more time.
Now, Jim, since you were the zygote of the group in 84, pretty much, what was your first exposure to an 84 mold or 84 cartoon or comic?
Well, as I mentioned previously, I lived vicariously through my older brother. He would, you know, regularly get me up at the butt crack of dawn. To not our dawn, but you know, to watch G.I. Joe, Transformers, you know, every morning before he got up and went to school in the morning. It was just before I started going to kindergarten. And so he was the one that had a lot of the toys first. I eventually got ones like you know, Squawk Pop Box, Top Spin, because Twin Twist sucks, you know, and ones like that. But as far as comics, my first exposure to a Transformers comic was in a grocery store in Paris, Illinois, called Bridwell's, which is no longer in existence. But I don't even know what issue it was now. I recall seeing Megatron in the comic, and that his helmet was so much different than I was accustomed to from the cartoon. You know, it had the accents of black in it, as opposed to just being the regular silver bucket that I was so familiar with. But as far as detailed comics, my first exposure to a detailed comic that I can actually remember was not even from a Transformers comic. It was from Family Home Entertainment, the home video volumes. Had little brief battle scenes on the front, like this here's Volume 1, More Than Meets the Eye. It has Megatron and Optimus talking smack to each other. On the back, you've got a little brief preview of kind of what happens in the episodes for the different comic panels. And in case you're wondering, this is not the VHS. This is Betamax. Because I'm old school.
Dude!
Right?
Will you sell me that?
I'm trying to build up some money to replace my Combined Wars Devastator and still get a G2 Superion from...
Dude, I actually have a Betamax player, too. I got Top Gun on Betamax.
I can't find a working player.
I have two of them.
Nice.
Yeah, okay. Hit me up later.
I'll talk about after the show.
We'll trade nude pics.
Right. But I'm trying to save up money for the G2 Superion from Captured Prey. Great toys, great prices, great service. CapturedPrey.com. And also you can find some pretty cool stuff from Mega Toy Fan as well. Maximize your collection, minimize your cost with MegaToyFan.com. Best segue.
Best one. Well, yeah. It's a little bit jagged, but.
Yeah, it works.
I like how you just moved right into it.
So. Yes. But the FHE volumes, Family Home Entertainment Video, you had G.I. Joe and Transformers, and I assume some other children's cartoons in the 80s, but mainly those two, available in home video form, different volumes, not like the whole seasons like we have now, and we take those for granted, I'm sure, but. You would have, sometimes two, three episodes per tape, sometimes one episode per tape. Most commonly, they would be in VHS, and they would be in massive freaking boxes like this. I was lucky enough to find Betamax, though. It was an eBay auction, and they had five of the volumes. So I'm like, yes, so I snatched them up, mainly because they were so obscure. But, a video store locally when I was a kid, Act One Video, had those, and I would rent those all the bloody time. Those, the Thundercats, the G.I. Joe volumes, all of them. And I probably ran them to the point where it wouldn't play anymore, I'm sure. But that was my original exposure to,
SOS Dinobots was mine. My mom actually rented. It was back when you could go to the video store and get and rent the Betamax tapes, and she went and rented SOS Dinobots for me. And in a span of like 2 days' time, I probably watched that episode maybe 30 times. I could recite it word for word, and I wore the tape out. Literally wore the tape out.
Nice.
But I mean, that seeing that old Betamax tape just brings back some memories too. But now in 84, we've talked about the Perfect Storm. We've talked about our memories. Let's talk about the Decepticons. We didn't go those. Greg, do you still have that catalog scan handy?
Let me screen share just a second.
Okay. And let Rick go over the Decepticons and we'll talk about some of the highlights there.
Oh, well, let's see. So because they're the bad guys, you're not going to have quite the selection you are of the good guys. And that's in just about every toy line out there. That's still true to this day. Let's start at the high end of the spectrum. You have your Megatron figure, which actually turned into a Walter P-38 gun. Now, what was cool about the Japanese version was that you could actually fire pellets from it. Mm-hmm. The one we got released here, unfortunately, couldn't. Then you got your Microman Soundwave, which came with Buzzsaw. And I don't think there was ever a toy like this before where he combined so perfectly with other characters where you could put that tape inside of his chest. And I think that play pattern had a big part in making Soundwave as popular as he is today.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You have your Jets, Starscream, Thundercracker, Skywarp.
Which I would like to point out, 15. In this catalog, their wings are on upside down in robot mode.
Yes.
They are. I did not notice that. They are.
Well, plus the blue streak of the Autobot side, blue streak there was the blue silver hood instead of the silver, black, silver, or solid silver, and then you got a black hood.
Yeah. So $11, $15, you had your Jets. I was lucky enough to have Starscream, but when I had the chance to get Skywarp and Thundercracker, I was like, I'd rather get a different character rather than someone who's the same toy as somebody else. And then you had Rumble Frenzy or Frenzy Rumble and Ravage and Laserbeak rounding out the Decepticons for 84.
Yeah, the blue one came with Laserbeak, the red one came with Ravage.
Yeah.
Yes, but what were their names? In the show, the red one was Frenzy and the blue one was Rumble. In the toys, it was switched around.
So it was
Somebody
got just their lines crossed because it was black and white photocopy of something and they couldn't tell the colors. And
yeah.
So I'll tell you a quick story, side note. Remember Omega Supreme? And they made an action master called Omega Supreme.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I actually found the original art for that character at the Hasbro vaults, and it's spelled Omega Supreme on there. And then they have an overlay that would come over top the artwork, and it was misspelled Omega Supreme. And they just must have used that name.
Wow.
Yeah, I'd heard it was supposed to be Supreme, but they just somehow got screwed up.
Just a typo or something, I guess, whenever they were printing that out, or
it was just a plastic protector that came over the artwork, and it was written in like black Sharpie, Omega Supreme.
And that officially became his name.
Yeah, because people didn't know.
You know, talking about the Decepticon jets, Starscream, Thundercracker, and Skywarp. That was the only jets that was available in 1984. And I had all three. And the reason why ties back into what we were talking about earlier, the hype machine that was really kicking in. I mean, they literally hit the ground with all gears pumping in 1984. And the whole reason I wanted all three, Starscream, Thundercracker, and Skywarp, yeah, they were exactly the same toy, just different colors. But in the cartoon, they were such unique and interesting characters. I like the fact that Skywarp, he was cool because he was black and had the lavender colors, but he had that warping ability. And then Thundercracker was just this grumpy, warrior that was a lackey. And then Starscream was, well, Starscream. So each one of those had such a resounding desire within me to actually want those characters. I totally fell for the hype. And as a kid, I dove right into it. I told, whenever we go to the store, my mom, she didn't know. She was the one that primarily bought me the toys. She didn't know that they were identical toys, just different colors. It's like, I want that character. You know, and I wonder if that.
Oh, Duran, lost you. Hello?
Apparently he hasn't come back yet.
Okay.
Kids really like them. Kids go to the store. The kids point at that toy. They want that toy. The parents buy them, not knowing what they're buying. I guess that's how the machine works, but that's how it worked in my household.
That was a great story. Maybe you should tell it again.
Yeah, because we lost you about halfway through.
Great. Fantastic. What part did I leave off?
You know, I never met anyone.
Your mom was the one primarily buying you the toys, and she didn't know, and then you were gone.
Oh. Well, she didn't know the difference between that they were the same toys, so she just bought the toys for me because I watched the cartoon. I liked the characters. I go to the store, point at it, and I'd say, I want that toy. And if she could afford it, she'd buy it for me. And the jets were within that price point that she was acceptable with, you know, the jets and the cars. I guess that's why I had a number of both of those. The only jet that I'd never had was Ramjet because he eluded me for some reason as a kid.
Which the only jet I had as a kid was Dirge.
30, right?
Same here.
Somebody's on a time limit.
Hi.
Well, anybody else have any stories about that or thoughts on the Decepticons specifically from 1984? Any memories of those toys?
I remember getting the Megatron toy, and I think it might have been 85, maybe 86. Because I think it might have been 86 because we saw the movie. Oh, I guess it was 85. We saw the movie, and then we ended up getting the Megatron toy right after that. And I remember I looked at it and looked at it and looked at it before I ever opened the box. I would just stare at it, and I looked at the box and just think, man, this is going to be the greatest toy ever. I can't wait to play with this thing. Look at the pictures on this thing. Look at the box art. Look at the toy sitting in there. And then you open it up, and it's like, I don't know how to transform this thing.
It's a floppy mess. In there.
He won't stand up.
Well, the only memory I have of an 84 toy, I don't remember exactly which year it was, but I went to Michigan with my dad to visit my uncle and my cousins. And I remember I had some money saved up, and for whatever reason, I really, really wanted Blaster. Now, as a kid, I never did get Blaster, but I remember I wanted Blaster, so we went to a store, and my cousin was helping me look for trying to find a Blaster. Well, he found, yeah, I know, he was an 85, but some of the 84 toys released in 85 as well. Somebody put in the chat that he was an 84 toy. But I was trying to find Blaster. He found the Transformers. He was looking. I was looking all over the store. He comes to me and was like, well, I don't think they have a Blaster. I can't find one. But they have this. And he held up Megatron. Huh. And he was trying his best to talk me into buying Megatron because he thought it was just cool that it was Transformers turned into a gun. And I had no desire. I was dead set on getting Blaster, so I didn't buy it. Of course, I ended up not finding Blaster either, so I didn't get that either. But looking back, and it, I don't even think it took that long. I think at some point, just down the road, maybe a year or so, I was like, man, I should have got that Megatron. And so I've always regretted not buying that Megatron.
Yeah, that Megatron was one of those as a kid that I remember. I was like, I had my illness as a kid, and I was in the hospital. And then 1980, the Christmas of 85, my dad sold his business. We moved to Florida, and it was my first Christmas that I'd spent out of the hospital. My parents were so happy to have me alive that they got me pretty much every Transformer that was on the shelf. And he told me that after he sold his business, he went into like Children's Play World in Lexington, Kentucky, and or Children's Palace rather, and grabbed a stock boy and told him, I want one of every one of these Transformer things on the shelf. And they happened to have pretty much everything except for Megatron. And that brings up another question. Something that we really don't see today. I mean, it kind of happens if you go to a slow selling store or something, but generally back in the 84, 85, 86 range, you could go and get like the previous year or two's toys, say from, if you can, in 1986, I remember some 1984 characters still being readily available on the shelf. Whereas today, that would be the equivalent of finding Transformer Prime stores or Prime toys still on the shelf, readily available. And it just doesn't happen today unless you go to like a really slow store or a store happens to find a case in the back that has some really old stock in it. I wonder why that is. I wonder if Hasbro just produce for numbers of years and then stop, or anybody have any theories on that? Or
I think inventory procedures are probably different in the 80s. It wasn't computerized. And I think toys would just get lumped into Transformers, Star Wars, My Little Pony, Rainbow Bright. So I don't think it was unusual then. Now that the world's all digital, it's a lot easier to keep track of what you have and where you have it. I remember a store closing in 1991 called Kitty City, And I walked in, and they had Transformers from 1987 still on the shelf, and they had Cobra Terradrome there, and everything was, like, dirt cheap. You know, the I got lucky one time last year. I was at a Walmart, and they had a clearance section, and I walk in, and they had the Robots in Disguise Leader Class Optimus Prime from the movie with the hooks in it. Oh. And it was $10, still in the box. Ah. The box was beat.
Sounds like Greg going into Walmart here recently and finding Murder Bee still on the shelf.
Yeah, I was at a Walmart. This was from a Dark of the Moon toy 2 movies ago, just hanging on the pegs, and I scanned it. It was $7, and just because it was so old, I had to go ahead and buy it.
That's like movie before last.
Yeah, Dark of the Moon. It was nuts.
Longtime listener James Galtier, he posted on Facebook just now. I was born in 1983, so I didn't really get into the get to enjoy the 1984 line until later. My grandma found me an incomplete Soundwave and Slugfest at a garage sale. I remember getting Galvatron and Skullgren for Christmas one year. The first comic I picked up was my cousin gave me the Marvel issue where Skullgren becomes the movie star, which I absolutely love that issue, and that's one of the reasons why Skullgren is such a favorite character of mine. And he had the Pretender. I would also read the files on all the time back in the back of the Marvel comic books. He also played SOS Dinobots to death. And he was also very heavy into Beast Wars and the current stuff, but never really collected anything G1 outside of what survived from his childhood until he was waiting for his mom at a Borders for lunch. And he found Rick's book with Fort Max on the cover. After that, he went on a Yahoo auction and early eBay bench to fill the gaps that he missed it as a kid. That's a great story.
All right, I should friend that guy on Facebook because he keeps coming up on my suggested friends list. I'm like, yeah, I know that guy.
He found your book, Rick.
He's all over the place, James. I see him on all the boards and stuff, and I wonder if I've met him in person. He seems like a nice guy.
James, send Rick a friend request, or vice versa. But yeah, that 1984 was a great year. I mean, it kicked it all off. You know, here we are 32 years later, still, you know, we've got all kinds of toys, because of that small line. It was what, maybe 25 figures total. And 1985, it kind of grew. We'll talk about 1985 later on another episode, but 1984 really set apart boys' toys. It was something that, I mean, to the younger fans, people, I read on the boards and I read on Facebook all the time. And this is something we've kind of talking about in the private group, you know, how, you know, everybody's always saying, you know, why don't they do more G1 homages and stuff like that? Well, G1 is what started it all. And it's by no means an excuse, to not do anything else. I'm just as overjoyed that they're doing a Beast Convoy masterpiece, as anyone. You know, even though that's not my era, I love Beast Convoy, and I'll be all over that toy. But 1984 and Generation 1 will always be important to the Transformers brand. And for those fans who are young and don't know what it was like to be a kid back then, it compares nothing. To what is out there today. I mean, I don't care how well Hasbro and Takara are hitting on all cylinders with a particular line. nothing's going to match the magic that was in 1984 and in early 1985, whenever this thing really started taking ground and catching fire. Going onto the shelf, I mean, yes, it was a different economic time, different sales environment, but going on to the toy aisle and seeing literally three quarters of the toy aisle covered with nothing but Transformers. We've talked about that at length before on this show. And I don't really want to go into it too much more on this episode, but talking about the nostalgia effect from 1984 and why is it still resounding today is that it was such a game changer. And it just, I don't think it could ever be duplicated with any toy line, honestly. Not to the scale of Transformers. And, you know, I dare say even with the backing of a live-action movie, I don't think anything's going to get as hot and as continually popular as Generation 1 Transformers were. What do you guys think on that?
I agree. I mean, it's kind of like I was saying earlier. It's just that magic of it being new. The closest they've come to recapturing that was the 07 movie, but still wasn't quite the same thing.
I think the entertainment is leading the way, and you guys got to get over the fact that we're just old. We're dinosaurs, mm-hmm. and it's time to move on. And I think whenever they reboot this film series, and I mean they make a clean break from the Bay era to whatever the next iteration is in film, I think that is going to be absolutely huge for the brand.
I think so too.
I've said it once and before on this show, and I'll say it again, and I don't mean that it's that I sound like I don't want to sound like a curmudgeon and everything, and I'm not leaving the brand. And by saying that I want to quit doesn't mean that, like, okay, I'm going to quit and then sell everything I got behind me here. That's not what I mean. I'm still a fan and everything, and I consider myself a collector. But I have been for at least a year or two really wanting to just taper off and not be a collector anymore. I want to just be a fan. And I find that harder and harder and harder, especially whenever there's so much great stuff out there. Mm-hmm. But Rick's right. You know, I am getting older and I have other pursuits that I want to pursue monetarily. And if I continue being a collector, and God knows it, this is not a cheap hobby. No. You know, if I want to pursue other life pursuits, then collecting toys is not going to be something that I want to do for the long term. But that by no means says that I want to sell my collection and get out of the hobby altogether. I still love Transformers, always will. And I'll still always want to do this show. I do see a point within the next several years of me hanging up the hats and stop collecting. You know, I don't care how hot it is on the shelf or how awesome it is. And I actually see a point whenever, like Rick said, eventually they're going to stop making Generation 1 characters and focusing more on, you know, newer stuff like movie toys or maybe an Armada Prime or something. And I believe at that point I will be fully out of it, you know. But I don't mean to say that as depressing or a hater or anything. It's just something that I think is realistic and I want to do. Anybody else kind of feel that way as far as a collector goes?
Maybe a little, but I want to say that there's a couple odd factors that contribute to that as well. I mean, it could be, you know, the brand changing away from what drew you individually into it, or it could be the financial aspect, you know, because, you know, as you said, this isn't a cheap hobby. I mean, there's all kinds of factors, but I think for some folks, transitioning to other things, as opposed to collecting the main toys that are out now, I think that's something that quite a few folks are doing. Like some folks do the little PVCs and just have a display of the miniature figures, or Legends class to display as kind of a way to still hang on a little bit to that hobby in a way, without getting the full detail shelving or anything like that. And at the same time, some folks that were previously getting ready to go out of the hobby or had, for the most part, I think things like Generations and most especially Combiner Wars now more than a lot of other lines have helped to bring folks back in.
Combiner Wars is what I've been begging for literally precisely over a decade.
Yeah, have they bastardized it by doing the whole Mirage, Wheeljack, Trailbreaker, Ironhide?
Well, I don't mind it so much. I mean,
I don't either.
You don't have to buy them. Leave them on the shelf.
They weren't originally Combiner characters. But at the same time, it's nice to kind of change it up a little bit and say, hey, what if Wheeljack and Trailbreaker could combine? What if other Autobots could combine and could have this whole time? That kind of opens up the possibilities. Like, well, if they do Dinobots on down the line, maybe they can combine too. I don't know. Maybe they'll do that some point in 2016 or 2017. We don't know.
That's dubious.
I wouldn't rule it out because, we're getting a Fort Max. Whoever would have thought we'd ever get something like that? So...
We thought back in after Energon, we thought we'll never get combiners as good as we want them. I mean, when Energon combiners were coming out, they were kind of crap, but we thought we settled for them because we'll never get better. Now we're getting something better.
Well, you look at the original Generation 1 combiners and the Limbots especially. Mm-hmm. Most of them had almost an exact same transformation. They might have had different parts and everything, but essentially they were you had tons and tons of the same very similar samey toys.
Rectangles and square heads.
Yeah. And these Combiner Wars characters are true to that, but they stay so true to the original characterization of that. I mean, it's like my desktop right behind this video right now are the Combiner Wars Protectobots. And I look at this group and there's nothing about that does not scream G1 Protectobots to me. I mean, the Rook. Heads are Rook. But I've actually got the Unite Warriors on pre-order. So I'm taking care of that. But I look at Blades, I look at Streetwise, I look at Hotspot, and I'm like, thank you, Lord. This is what I have been begging for as a collector for over a decade. This is what I want. I do feel a bit of an overkill, but at the same time, it's a joyous overkill, so I'm just basking in it.
We've all gone through that, hey, I think I may want to get out. And then they do something like Combiner Wars and draw us back in. Because I had scaled down. I've got rid of all my classics. I was just doing my G1 collection and then the Masterpiece stuff as it comes out. And I was only going official on that just to save money and space. Because, you got a room here behind me. It's completely full. But then Combiner Wars comes out. And I'm like, oh, man. So now I've got a semi-classics collection again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So you're saying that now. But in a couple of years, something will draw you back in.
I'm saying that's what I want to do. I mean, because I do have other life pursuits, but that's a discussion for another time. We've went a little over an hour and a half on tonight's episode. Hope everybody enjoyed this little retrospective and reminisce of 1984. I think we'll streamline this a little bit better for future years. We may not necessarily do them chronologically. We may hop around the alternate cast. They may pick 1996 for Beast Wars, for their first year that they might want to do. But I hope everybody enjoyed this episode. And if you have any thoughts, questions, or comments about that, be sure to tweet them to us at TFYLP or join our Facebook group like James Gaultier did, and post a comment on the thread. We got a lot of people in there and lots of news and discussion going on. So check that out. And guys, I am officially registered to go as a dealer helper for BotCon. I will be at Captured Prey's booth at some point. look for me there. Anybody else have any closing thoughts?
I think it's awesome that BotCon is this close. I don't have to drive all that far.
Back to Kentucky. It's good.
Yeah.
I think I might skip the last BotCon.
Aw, it's in our home state.
Yeah, I know. I just, you know, if I go, I have to bring the girls because I want them to be able to say they went to a BotCon. So that's the only reason I might go. Plus, it's the last time, you know, the last BotCon. So.
Yeah, I mean, it,
come on, Rick, do it.
But it's something that. That I'm really looking forward to, and last year at BotCon, having so many fans come up to me and talk to me, and I love talking to the fans and hearing your thoughts and stories and everything, and we are so thankful as podcasters that you listen to us each week, whether it be at work, in your car. Wherever you go, we hope that you enjoy this show. We love to reminisce. We love to give you news and information on this great hobby of ours that is collecting Transformers. So unless anybody else has anything further to say, I'm Ron Land. This has been Transformers for a Listening Pleasure with Rick Alvarez, Jim Black, and Greg Metcalf. We will see you next time on TFYLP. Good night, everybody.
Bye.
See ya.
I'm going to go watch my Betamax.
Yeah, no, send me that.
This has been Transformers for your listening pleasure. A presentation of TFTalk.net. We'd like to thank you for listening and ask that you please rate us on your favorite podcast outlet and share us with your friends. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at TFYLP. Email us at podcast@TFYLP.com. This is Paul Lighting, and on behalf of TFYLP, we'd like to thank you again for listening, and we hope you'll join us next time for another TFYLP.